Desafinado, Discord, the theme music for our program Literary Discord, which talks about book publishing and books from a slightly different point of view. I am Hans Koning. We have talked already, and I'm going to talk again about discounts, not because we are so interested in profit margins, but because it plays a large role in the way the book trade develops. And today I have here Phil Lolillo, who's the Vice President Marketing for Borders. Borders, of course, is one of the big book conglomerates. The headquarters are in Ann Arbor, from which Phil will speak. Mr. Lolillo, I'm very glad that you're here because, believe it or not, it's turned out to be quite difficult to find a spokesman for or a spokeswoman for the large book change.
Is that right?
Yeah, and you would say that some of them have bad consciences because the way they act. But I've always had a great soft spot, if that's the word, for Borders, which somehow has a pleasant atmosphere. I've had readings in Chicago at your store, and I was quite impressed.
Well, that's great to hear.
And I'm a writer myself, but I'm certainly not one of those who sort of automatically and without further proof maintain that the big books chains are ruining the small stores. It seems to me there is certainly room for all that. And a common enemy, if that's the word, lies elsewhere.
Yes, I think the common enemy is probably two things. One thing would be, you know, the number of people in this country who actually read for pleasure or information. So they may be seeking their information other than in the book, you know, where books are available or through books. And then the other would be a corollary to the first point, would be just the amount of entertainment that is available today. And I would say if we think books are valuable, then we ought to think of a way to increase books as methods of gaining information and being entertained.
Right.
So if we can do those two things, we'll be in pretty good shape.
Well, yes, I couldn't agree with you more. But to go to a specific, the people who make the case for the small bookstore have told me and the world that they cannot possibly compete with the large discounts the bookstores can give on bestsellers, which are beyond the financial capacity of the small bookstore. This argument, which seemed quite serious and hard to answer, has certainly become rather strange, because we now hear that the large books chains are phasing out discounts. Can you speak on that?
Well, it's difficult to speak to the economics of the small bookstore. I've worked for smaller bookstores in my career, but I'm not really aware of the economics of running a smaller bookstore. I only understand what we're doing at Borders.
But is it true that you are, in principle, lessening the discounts?
Yes. What we've done is, in the past, until late last fall, we ran a 10% discount on all hardcover books. And what we did was took a look at what was prompting customers to actually come into our stores. And if you think of discounting or a value proposition as some method of driving traffic into the store or creating value to the customer, the discounts that customers tend to notice are those on the books you sell the most of, so bestsellers. So what we actually did was got rid of an across-the-board discount and focused that discount on some mass market titles, certainly more trade paper titles and more cloth titles. So we took what we essentially is a discount budget, or a budget for looking at how we present value to the customer, and tried to make it apply more to the books we sell the most of, therefore saying to the customer, the books that you buy the most of, you're most likely to get at a price that's less than the list price.
Right.
That's a long way of answering a very short question.
Yes. Well, this it remains a moot subject for me. I've had a a small bookstore owner on this program who said that it was contrary to all laws of economics to lower the price of something which sells very well. My idea always was that if you print a million copies of one book, you obviously have a much larger profit margin than if you print 1,000 copies of 1,000 books. So it makes sense that a bestseller, that you could discount a bestseller, but not discount a book of which you only hope to sell a few copies.
Those economics certainly follow. When you think about the number of bestsellers that we sell, and one way to think about it is, one of the concepts that we think about is how quickly can you move in and out of your books, meaning that you certainly sell a lot more copies of Grisham, or many more times will you sell the latest Grisham novel than you will sell a backlist Jane Austen novel. But Jane Austen, more likely than not, is something that a customer is coming into the store specifically to buy, meaning they had it in their mind that they needed Jane Austen and they knew that Borders would have it. Therefore, they're going to stop at Borders and get the book. But in terms of driving traffic, when you look at the bestseller market, when you have the Costcos of the world and Targets and Kmarts and airport stores and superstores and mall stores and independents, everybody is trying to sell the same best-selling titles. So the market is actually more competitive in the best-selling ranks, therefore driving discounting. When you look at a store like Borders that stocks 130,000 or 140,000 book titles, it's not the books, you know, that are in the 80 or 90,000 range in terms of their sales range that are going to hit the bestseller list. Those are the books that you can probably sell at full price, because the customer is truly coming in to buy that specific book, and they know that Borders will have it. So it really wasn't doing us any good. We weren't getting any credit from the customer for discounting those slow-selling backlist books. But you tend to get more credit from the customer who is aware that a best-selling novel is available in 20 or 30 different places. So not only was it the competitiveness of the market that drove us to discount more bestsellers, it was also the idea that with a strong title base, customers are more likely to treat your store as a destination. Therefore, why give them a discount on books that they're already going to buy?
Oh, no, that makes eminent sense, and it's a completely fresh approach to this, which I haven't heard before. What specifically is the policy of the chain of Borders?
Well, we look at we discount more or less titles every single week, depending on sales volume. But generally, what it comes down to is about 30 to 50 hardcover books are on sale or have a discount.
How much of a discount?
About 30%.
I see.
30% off. Everything in the bestseller ranks is 30% off. So the trade paper that we have on sale would be 30% off. The mass market that we have on sale would be 30% off. But then we also have other things in the store that are on sale. So, for instance, we price DVD. We're in the music business as well, and we price DVD and at $19.95 when the list price might be $26. We price compact discs at $12.99 and $13.99, you know, when the list price might be $16.99 and $17.99. So there's other places to find value in the store. We're also proud of our bargain book program. We have 1,000 titles in general that are in bargain books that people don't think of as being discounted, but they're certainly value-based books.
I see. What do you mean? What do you mean a value? What is it exactly?
Remainders.
I see. Of course.
Yeah.
I see. But the across the board 10% you have stopped applying
on cloth, because you know you take those dollars and you say, well, where could you best apply those discount dollars? Again, is it best across the board on all of those cloth titles, or can you take those dollars and apply them to discounts in some other place in the store to get you more customers?
Right.
We thought that if we took, you know, one trade-off that we made was, by not discounting all of cloth at 10% off, we made a decision to discount more paperback at 30% off.
Right. Now, in general, when you count in the returns, the whole thing, if I'm well informed, that is, you pay something like 60% of the jacket price to the distributor. Is that right?
That's in the range.
So if you give a 30% discount, there's a very little margin for profit left for the store.
Right. See, what you lose in margin, you need to make up on volume, to your earlier point.
Right. So the point is to get people into the store.
Right.
Now, there is something very mysterious about this, that there are large stores which somehow seem to have nothing you ever want to see or read, and there are smaller stores or other large stores which somehow have, quote, everything, unquote. somehow, obviously, you, I think I put you in that second category, and I assume you, that your book buyers have more sense in general than the average book buyer in the industry. Is that a proper way of looking at it?
Well, we like to think so. We like to think that the books that we have in the stores are the right books for the community. In total, I'm in charge of the buying at Borders as well as the buying at Walden Books. So for those 1,250 stores, we have about 75 people in the buying department. And those 75 people are generally broken down by category. So we have some, you know, experts in certain categories. We have science experts and fiction experts and history experts, gardening experts, sport experts, people whose whole life is understanding the market in that particular category or genre. You know, we have two people who are probably the greatest minds in romance publishing in the industry just because they see so much and they react to sales in so many different communities. We take that experience across those 75 people and try to make sure that the assortments in every single store make sense. And then we supplement that with the ability of the store to look into all the books that we have in our system and say, we think these books are the right books for our store. So they send us recommendations on what they should be carrying locally. So, for example, if you have someone who's an expert in one of our stores in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, we have one store in Eau Claire, you know, we're not going to know everything there is to know about that market, but they certainly have the tools to give us more information about what the right number of titles and the right books are for that community. So there's good feedback from the stores, both in terms of point-of-sale information and from the booksellers in the field, and they pass that information back to the home office, and you combine that with what we believe are superior purchasing systems to put the right books in the right communities.
Will you order any book ordered, no matter how hard it may be to find it or how unrewarding it would be from a money point of view?
I think when it comes down to it, from a customer point of view, we try to make available in the market any book that is available. So if you went into your local Borders and said, I need this title, and you can select an obscure title, in my mind, the store should do everything they can do to either find the book for you or tell you why they can't find it. And at that point, it's really not about making money. At that point, it's about customer service. Right. The big problem or the big challenge we have is traditional trade publishers in the United States, we buy direct from about 1,500, and through one distributor or another, I think we deal with about 15,000. They publish in the range of 55,000 to 60,000 books a year. So we review 55,000 to 60,000 books a year for purchase titles. And we end up actually making a purchase decision in a positive way, meaning buying something on about 35,000 of those titles. When you get into the range of the titles that are published by small authors or not widely distributed authors, it becomes more difficult. We don't have all the information we need. We do have a new press department at the home office, and those people are responsible for reviewing anything that comes in that has the opportunity to sell. So at a certain point, you have to believe that your brand or the idea of Borders as a bookseller is all about its assortment. So the more information we have, the better the decisions are. That doesn't guarantee you that if you publish a book, we're automatically going to buy it, because we have to make sure that we're doing everything we can do to help that book sell. So, for instance, there are self-published authors who don't either have the marketing experience or the range or the breadth of distribution that would make sense for us to put it in all stores. But certainly on a community-by-community basis, we will accept and look at any book, at least to review for a purchase.
What is your shelf life policy? How does that work out?
It really varies by title. So we have complex rankings by subject. So I mentioned all kinds of different subjects where our buyers buy from. And in thinking about what books to carry, we think about, well, we certainly would expect romance, and the romance genre certainly behaves differently than the mathematics category or subject. So we might have more patience with books in mathematics and less patience with books in romance, depending on how the books do. So, for example, a critical book on statistics may end up being on our shelves for years, just because we think it's probably the best work in this field of statistics. A book by a genre romance author may have a very short shelf life. So, for instance, Harlequin series romance, those books go in and out of print very, very quickly because the publisher and the authors have a different marketing plan for that book than, say, someone who has published the seminal work in statistics.
Right. You don't look at your shelf space as per se as sort of a commodity which has such and such a price.
I think what we try to do is take a look at the specific category and say, what does this category mean to the viability of the specific Borders store as a bookstore in the community? So it's not a question of is this section making more or less money than other sections. It's more a question of what is the total contribution of the store? What should the mix be in the store to represent the needs of the community? And quite frankly, how much space do we have in the store? We couldn't possibly carry everything. So if we tried to carry everything that had been published in a bookstore, you would have a book as big as, you know, the warehouses of some of the largest distributors of books.
Right.
So at some point it becomes just an exercise in how much space do you have versus how much can you actually put into the store.
I have a question which obviously you don't have to answer because I don't know how secret these policies are.
Sure.
But do you have is there a policy where publishers actually pay for good spots in the store?
Well, let me back up. As you know, publishers offer cooperative advertising based on your purchasing.
Yes.
So they create dollars for marketing in the stores or in print or in other places, and all booksellers have access to their cooperative advertising dollars based on their overall purchases. And so that's, in general, the way cooperative advertising works. When you think about space in the store, we will run certain promotions on certain fixtures in the store, and the publisher will support that space in the store. So, for instance, if we're running a back-to-school promotion or if we're running a gardening promotion, we think of creative ways to spend those co-op dollars to bring excitement to the subject. So in that way, you could say, yes, you know, certain spaces in the store or certain promotions in the store are publisher-supported. But what we think of is, are these the best books, and is this the best way to use those marketing dollars? So we may use those marketing dollars for advertising externally to drive traffic into the stores. So, for instance, you might see a New Yorker ad, or you might see a USA Today ad, or you might get a flyer in your local paper saying to come to Borders, and specific titles will be mentioned. And in general, those titles are supported by cooperative advertising by publishers. You may also find the same thing in the stores. So we may run, as I said, a back-to-school promotion or a travel promotion, and at times we feel like that's the best way to speak to the customer through those marketing dollars. So the short answer to your question is yes. We use some marketing dollars in the store that are supplied by publishers for placement. The long answer is we think about subjects in very specific ways in terms of what's the best way to speak to the customer to drive sales of those books, based on the cooperative advertising that's made available from the publishers.
Now let's look at what I like to call serious literature, which is not necessarily better or worse, but it just has different motivations and a different audience, obviously. And some of these books, I'm sure, come into your store really as orphans. They may be surprised themselves to find them there, assuming that they could have thoughts. How would their lifespan and how would their lives in a Borders store develop?
Well, I think we are fairly or extremely proud. I'm not shy about using a word like extremely. We're extremely proud of our support of mid-list authors. We're extremely proud of the depth of our selection. And, you know, we do studies all the time and research all the time on, does the average Borders bookstore have more titles than it traditionally has had over time, or fewer titles than it has had? And in almost every case, Borders Books and Music will carry more titles year after year. We find that the more titles you carry, generally, the more excited your customers are about being there because they're more likely to find what they need. And we have all kinds of different customers. You know, we have customers who come only to shop computer books, and then we have customers who shop the entire store. When you think about serious literature, we're proud of our relationship with small, serious university presses to large university presses. Proud of our relationships with the literary imprints of major houses. And we're proud of our ability to sell books from all kinds of places. You know, we're proud of our relationship with Publishers Group West, which distributes many, many great lines of both fiction and poetry. One example of our commitment to what you might classify, or we all might classify, as literary or more serious literature is our commitment to the Dodge Poetry Festival. We brought in 15,000 separate titles of poetry for the festival, which was held this year, I believe, in New Jersey. And those titles were already in our database. We didn't have to dig very far to find 15,000 poetry titles to support the Dodge Poetry Festival.
Oh, that's very impressive, I must say. 15,000 of living poets?
15,000. Well, I'm not sure whether they were living or dead. All I know is that we had the titles in our database.
But you're not thinking of classics of long ago.
Certainly.
I see. Well, how do you see the collaboration or the battle for life and death between the small independent stores and a store like Borders or Barnes & Noble or whatever?
Well, it's a difficult thing to speak to. For us, there are two serious ways, or there are two interesting ways of us looking at our business. That we are certainly a public company and are held to the same standards that any other public company is held to. So we're an aggressive company. We want to expand the number of bookstores with the level of quality that Borders has, both in the United States and abroad. And we think there's still room for growth on the superstore side for Borders Books and Music. We want to make sure that we do that with the best interests of our customers and our shareholders in mind, and those two things are not necessarily mutually exclusive, although some would have you believe that they may be. And as far as independents are concerned, I have never worked in an independent, so I don't understand or could not speak to their specific economic models. But I have been in some wonderful independents in this country in my travels, and the one I can speak to specifically in Ann Arbor, Michigan, is Shaman Drum, which is not even more than a block from one of our best Borders Books and Music in downtown Ann Arbor. And both of those stores serve our community in Ann Arbor in very different ways. And sometimes they serve the community in the same way. High levels of customer service, great inventory, and I think both stores are probably run very, very well. So that would be the one specific example I would use of where independents and stores of the caliber of Borders Books and Music can operate in the same community. As far as the struggle for independence, I think that the struggle for independence is there are all kinds of additional pressures on independent bookstores. Not saying that superstores aren't a pressure, but if you add up the pressure of the clubs, the warehouse clubs that sell books, or the airports that sell books, or the Internet, which is certainly Amazon.com and other publishers or other online booksellers have gone from zero to $1 billion in book sales in less than 5 years. So it's not just the superstores that are applying pressure to the independents. It's the total it's all of the players in the marketing there in the market that are applying pressure to each other. We compete as much with Internet booksellers as we do with warehouse clubs or places like Target or Kmart or Best Buy or Barnes & Noble. The independents are certainly a competitor of ours, but quite frankly, we are more concerned with developing and running the best bookstores in the country and are less concerned about how the independent bookstores run their business.
How do you see yourself, a large chain, as compared to the Internet book business?
Well, I think that we are finding that Internet book buyers may have different motivations than book buyers who tend to shop at a bookstore. And a lot of times, we also have a large mall division, a 900-store mall division. And I think one of the things that's interesting to me as we look at our customers is book buyers in general probably fit a more narrow range of a demographic model in terms of the people who buy books in this country. And what I think of is if you go to the mall, you may not be in the mall or in a mall bookstore for the same reason that you may be at a superstore. You know, in fact, you may be at a mall bookstore as one of your shopping opportunities in the mall. And that is certainly proven to be true for Walden Books. When you're in a Borders, you may be there for another reason. You may be there because you know Borders is going to have the title on the shelf, because there is an extensive selection, or the customer service is great, or because it was a right-hand turn into the parking lot. I mean, there are all kinds of different reasons that a shopper may shop at a Borders.
That sounds like a splendid reason.
And in the parking.
Yeah,
and,
right there at the parking lot.
Sometimes it comes down to parking. Hopefully it comes down to selection and customer service, but sometimes it probably comes down to parking. But on the Internet side, I think customers shop the Internet for different reasons.
Yes.
So you go to convenience grocery stores for different reasons than you go to gourmet grocery stores. You shop the Internet for different reasons than you're going to shop a superstore. I think it's probably good for the for book buyers in the country that they have so many choices. I think it's probably difficult for booksellers in the country because there are so many choices and we need to react to so many motivations for the customer.
You know, I don't know, you're probably aware of it or perhaps not. In Europe, there's a big struggle between fixed price adherents and people who just want the market to do whatever it wants. Have you met that whole idea?
We had some experience with our Books Etc. Division organization and our Borders Books and Music in Great Britain. We own a chain of bookstores called Books Etc. in Great Britain.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And that chain, group of stores, about 35 stores, mostly in Main Street or what the British call high street locations.
Yes.
Recently went through in the past few years the demise of the net book agreement.
Yes.
And the net book agreement.
Right. And in France, they have gone back to it.
And I can't speak to France, only to our experience in England. And the net book agreement, we think, was probably a great thing for the book buyer in Great Britain. And I think what it did is it made booksellers think differently about the way they run their businesses. And probably that kind of change was good for the market. It probably provided more books at lower prices to customers, and made booksellers become more efficient at providing those books.
Right. Okay, as a last question, do you sort of ever wake up in the night and despair at the future of real books, print books in paper and ink?
No, one of the things that motivates me personally is the number of books that are published every year seems to go up. So the good news, I think, for book publishing and book selling in this country is that every single year, more and more books are introduced. So as we look at e-books and we look at changes in the way that electronic commerce will move or shift the way that information is provided to consumers, one of the things that's very interesting to me is that more and more books are made available. One of the great things that's happening in this country today is that it's becoming easier and easier to publish books because the technology necessary to create short-run printing is becoming more readily available. And again, I think people will look to technology for different reasons. There are some books that are a natural for electronic commerce, and those books tend to be books you can use rather than books you read. An example of that would be certain computer books or test prep or tax guides. The computer may be the right place for those.
Right.
But fiction and literature and books that you either entertainment is probably too light a word, or maybe enlightenment is a better word to use for books like that. The best place to transfer that information from where it originated to the reader is probably through a book. So we're actually looking forward to seeing more books published, but also balancing that against there are more places for information to be available. We need to be able to act on both.
Okay. Philip, I thank you very much, and the best of Irish luck with the bookstores.
Well, thanks so much, Hans. It was great talking to you.
Nice talking to you.
Okay, bye now.
You have listened to Literary Discord, our monthly book program about books and book publishing. My guest was Phil Olillo, who is the Vice President of Marketing for the Borders Book Chain. We hope that you will be listening again for our next show, which is on January the 25th, And till then, Happy New Year. I'm Hans Koning, and the producer is Scott Harris.